zero kids, then your probability of loss is one. You know you've got the allele has then been lost. And so the only chance of not being lost are the components of this sum above j equals zero that can that make this below one and allow it to persist. Okay. So it's in this ST that we need to figure this to get an understanding of how selection, this selection varying over time affects the fixation probability. And this at this point it's fairly trivial. We can replace the one thing that's kind of a little nasty in this equation is it depends on time, but it also depends on P, but P just depends on time, so we might as well just work in terms of one of those clocks, and it's easier to work in terms of the allele frequency instead. So we divide this by dp dt to do so, and we get a differential equation now in terms of time as a function of p. So these are, I'm just writing these subscript p's to help remind us that these things all depend on that p. And we know this is dp dt just from the standard haploid model of selection. Okay. So this differential equation can be solved, and with weak selection, it gives us a result that the fixation probability is 2 times SA times SD over, I'm going to get my signs right, SAP plus SD times 1 minus P plus things that are on the order of S squared.
And P now is the frequency when it first...
When it first appears, that's right. But what's interesting about this, so it has two limiting cases which we would expect. If p equals zero, so this thing arises right at the very beginning, then this is 2SA, because it's just got the beneficial mutation. If it appears when p is near one, then this is 2SD, which is the benefit that it has just from getting rid of the deleterious mutation, but everybody carries the beneficial mutation, so it doesn't get that anymore. So those two limiting cases are what we'd expect. And I've got a graph here to show how it changes in other cases.
So what is it that you assume to be deterministic here? Is it the frequency of the double mutant?
So I am right now assuming lots of things are deterministic, and then we're going to go back and do some more stuff in a stochastic way. But yes, at this point, I'm assuming that the background is
right.
Changing with this logistic shape.
Right,
roughly.
Independent on the new fitter guy.
Yes. So when the new fitter guy appears, its probability of being lost or established is going to happen while it's rare.
Right. Okay.
So I think it's fair to say that the perturbation to that logistic will be minor enough.
You're also neglecting continual recombination, right? That could sort of break up in the good combination.
If the recombination rate is so high that this will happen with this, it will certainly uncouple the beneficial allele. So this is just asking for a specific recombinant that has occurred, what's its chance of succeeding? And then we'll ask the question of all of the recombinants that will occur. What is the chance that none of them succeed? So that's the next step. Okay, so we've got this black box now filled in. So this recombinant has occurred in some generation, T, where the allele frequency is P. And here's an example of how that fixation probability depends on the allele, the chromosome frequency when it arises as a beneficial deleterious combination. And it has these two extreme cases, 2SA, 2SD that I mentioned, and this shows that the probability of fixation is actually lower than you would expect based on the current fitness in the population because the mean fitness is rising in the background. And so that the fact that the future population will be somewhat more fit means that while it's establishing itself, its fitness is declining, and so its probability of fixation is slightly less. And how much less depends on the SAs and SDs. But this is an illustration of how cute branching processes can be. Okay, so now we have that. Now we have to ask, this is still in the back of the envelope calculation, what's the chance that no fitter recombinant establishes in any of the N individuals in the population? So that's just putting these things together. This is the probability that one individual, 2p1 minus p, r over 2 times pi, this part here, that's one individual, is a lucky recombinant that survives loss while rare. 1 minus that is the chance that that individual is not a lucky recombinant. And then we need all n of the individuals not to be lucky recombinants in order for none of the individuals in the population to give rise to a recombinant. And then we have to do that for all of the time of the entire sweep. So we have to have no lucky recombinants from t equals 0 to the fixation process. And sorry, that's a product, and this is a pi. And so for the math people, I'll do a few intermediate calculations here, which for the math people will be pretty obvious, but maybe it'll be illuminating to some. So now we have more light. We have the probability of a hitch that we need to calculate is this product over all time. 1 minus, this is the probability that there's no successful recombinants in that generation. This is that pi that depends on time or on p. Let's make it depend on p. Okay, and for things like, if we assume selection is small, so that this pi is going to be small, then 1 minus something to the n is really close to e to the minus that thing. And you can formally prove that with a Taylor series. So we'll do that first.
But the thing that's really small is r in here, isn't it?
It can be rn, it can be pi. So we can get it two ways. Yeah, if r is large, we'll soon see how small.
Then his point kicks in and it doesn't matter anymore.
That's right. And we'll see that. We'll see the question that we can ask now is how large is that r, that critical value where above that point we're really not ever going to see this happen.
So is it obvious that you want to do it this way, or do you want to have a sum and z exponent of it?
Then the next step is e to the minus sum of that thing. And then, again, assuming that that's small and things are changing slowly, we're going to replace that with an integral over time, because this is the product over time. And then we're going to do the same thing we did before and say, okay, I can integrate this more readily if I replace that with an integral over p. You can see where I'm going. But then I have to divide that by dp dt again. And so this is that chromosomes changing in the background. So this cancels and that cancels and that cancels and that cancels. And then we get, I'm going to pull some things out of that integral. So rn. I'm going to use my formula over there, 2SASD over SA minus SD. But then in the integral, where my P's come from still is that denominator over there. So I have 1 over, I'm actually going to pull out an SD. This is with respect to p, and then I'm left with one. It shouldn't work black when I'm on the chalkboard, white everywhere now. Okay, so we have, what I've done is I've taken this part out of the integral, and then the denominator that we're left with is, I've divided by SD, I've taken that out, so we're left with 1 plus SA over SD P minus. P. plus p s a over s minus 1. Okay, and this is a standard integral that we can easily solve. Even my undergraduates remember how to do this one. So we get that again. This is a log function, which we have to evaluate in respect to p. Log 1 plus p. I'm sure this is almost there, so it's worth forging ahead. And then we have to divide it by that. Okay. And then we have to evaluate it. Now, you're technically, this is, you should evaluate it from p equals 1 over n to fixation, which we're going to say is close to 1 minus 1 over n. But to leading order, you might as well do it from 0 to 1. That little bit of extra difference isn't going to matter in a large population. So you can take this from p equals 0 to p equals 1.
This is a fact of SD.
Thank you. Yeah. And so when we evaluate that, when we put in p equals 0 there, it's going to disappear. So we only have the contribution from the other end of the integral. Now 1 plus p equals 1. So 1 plus minus 1 will cancel. We'll just be left with the SA over SD. And then in the denominator, we are left with the 1 plus, sorry, that 1 over SD is times the whole thing.
There shouldn't be a P of the term.
No, it should be a P.
Oh.
You got too much in the
chat. Sorry.
Why is the integral is not simply a logarithm of something? I'm sorry, maybe I just missed something, but the integral is 1 over 1 plus constant times P, so it should be just a logarithm.
Cross out the 1.
Yeah, sorry. So with respect to the integration of P. Yes, of course. Sorry. But I still have the 1 over SD because I pulled that out. I pulled that out earlier. I pulled it out here. Okay. Thank you. Sorry about that. Should read my notes more carefully. Okay. So, and then this SD, I'm going to put that back in, and we're going to get an SA minus SD here in the denominator. Okay. And that gives me the final result that I want. And I'm going to write it, to clean it up a bit, I'm going to write it as e to the negative omega times the log. That, where omega.
I'm sorry, something is still not right.
Okay, 1 second, let me just finish writing this, I'll go back. 2SASD. Okay. Make sure I've got all my fractions here. Okay.
Maybe it's just me, but when you're doing this integral, you should have this S2 divided by SD, or I don't see the notation, minus 1.
This is SA.
It should be...
It's just a 1 plus
right.
1 over plus...
But you should multiply... Yep, am I the only one who is having a problem with this integral?
So you have the log of it, and then you have to divide it by the integral.
What I'm arguing is that it's this formula, this logarithm, the s something divided by s t minus 1 should be above in the denominator, not below. Or
no.
Because when you take the derivative of this, you get it on top, and you need to cancel it.
Sure.
Okay. So when SD is equal to SA,
yeah, you're right.
Then you have a problem.
Sure.
Because then
not obviously a problem; it just goes to zero.
It goes to zero, so that combination is actually drifting neutrally, and the logistic approximations that I'm assuming for its spread won't work. So good question, worth keeping that in mind. Or, and also if it's it's less.
Going to zero should go to 1 over n or something like this, right?
That's right. We'll have to do a drift thing. And then if it's less, it's also possible that SA could be less than SD. And even though it's deleterious, it could still fix with some probability. And then we would have to do it using a different approach, which I'll mention in just a minute. OK. And this can actually be more simply cleaned up. SA over SD. So after all that, it's not that bad a result. So it depends on the recombination rate. It's actually an exponentially decaying function of the recombination rate, which makes a lot of sense. And we can figure out from this how it'll depend on the advantageous and the deleterious alleles and so on. But I actually want to stop there before talking about how this behaves to do this another way. It's probably overkill. But the question has come up. So right now, I've done everything assuming that this is a deterministically spreading background. But there's a few things that I have neglected. First of all, as that chromosome is spreading, it's not going to be perfect logistic. It's going to jiggle around a little bit as it goes. B. All right. That's the answer. So I'm ignoring that drift. The other thing that could be important is when anything succeeds in establishing itself, and you condition, you're only looking on those cases where this has gone on to fix, or the beneficial allele has survived stochastic loss while rare. And of all of those processes that start off, and some of them by chance go up faster and some slower, when you condition only on those ones that ultimately survive, there's an initial acceleration. It seems like they're going faster than the ones that ultimately die. And so that was ignored too in what I just did. So this is another approach that population geneticists use to answer questions like that. This, and that has to do with the diffusion process. So I'm going to derive a diffusion process for you.
Doesn't this initial acceleration matter?
You've got the right intuition.
It's going to happen.
Then I will let you give that answer in a second. So a standard diffusion would be this one, where we allow the alleles to rise to fixation, but with some jiggling. We're going to actually do a slightly different diffusion. It's a diffusion process with killing. So this chromosome is spreading, but there's some chance that while it's spreading, it's killed. The process is killed. And that'll happen with a probability kind of equivalent to what we've just seen. OK. So the diffusion processes are, I don't know, I have a love-hate relationship with them. Most of the ones that you can actually get any analytical handle on only deal with one variable. And so for those of us who are interested in multiple backgrounds and things, then you're often left with a set of diffusion equations that you have to numerically solve. This is a nice example, though, where we really are treating different backgrounds, and yet you can make some analytical headway with a diffusion model. So this diffusion model, it's going to describe the following. P, the probability, which is a function of the current haplotype frequency. This is a probability of, I better get this right, ultimately I left my piece of paper. So this is the probability of not being killed before fixation. And I'm going to just talk about the unconditional process, where I don't care whether or not that chromosome gets fixed on the p equals 0 boundary or the p equals 1 boundary. I'm only going to discuss this case. The other case, conditioning is just done in a standard conditioning way. Way you standardly condition on fixation of the chromosome of interest. So for a diffusion process with killing, it solves a standard diffusion model. Plus, so there's the drift component. then you have the mean change. Or you could say diffusion component, it's fine. And then, but also this probability will be decremented by the killing by the probability that the system is killed while it's at that chromosome frequency. And that will decrease this probability of not being killed.
Somehow backward in
time? Yeah, I can't remember. I think that's right. That's where it comes from. So it's in Carlin and Taylor, all of these kind of standard killing processes for conditioning. And if we measure time in units of n generations, which is the standard, then we get that the drift component is p times 1 minus p. This is the random jiggling due to finite population size. We get the mean change is the standard one. Oh, I'm going to measure time. I'm going to measure selection in a scaled way. I'll define that in a second. So that's p. So this is, what is that S net? That S net is equal to the advantage of that combination chromosome times the population size. And as standard in diffusion processes, we, by scaling by time, we need to scale by the selection coefficients, and this must be finite as the population size goes to infinity, or the diffusion won't, approximation won't work. Still, it seems to work even when that's not true. And then finally, we have this killing term. What is the probability that the term, the system will be killed if it's at current, at allele frequency p? Well, before we calculated what the probability was that it was not killed, which is a function p, this is the probability that it was that none of them were killed, and so 1 minus that will be the probability that it will be killed in that time step, but the time step is n generations long, so we have to rescale that.
But I'm so confused about the role of time.
Yeah.
So there's the probability of not being killed at time equal to infinity.
No. At time t, when p is at frequency p of t. So this diffusion can solve for all possible values of p of t that you're interested in. Once we have that solution, we'll actually be interested in a particular case when the initial allele frequency is 1 over n. But the diffusion process accounts for the...
Okay, so it's a backward equation with the initial condition p of t at n, and you're sort of sending them, you know, the final time to infinity, because you want the...
That's right, that's what I will... That's right.
Survival of the
that's right. And I haven't talked about the boundary conditions, but the probability that the system is not killed if it starts at zero, so it's fixed. It can't be killed because it's already done. And if it starts where the combination chromosome is already fixed, then the same thing there. So it cannot be killed if the process is over and it's already fixed the types. And we're assuming no recurrent mutations here.
So I'm confused about the factor n in the killing process, because that means that the whole diffusion isn't consistent.
Right. So let's keep going with this term.
Okay.
So this is then approximately p 1 minus p r pi p, so that whole term, times n, in the limit that this is small selection. And times n. So then now killing diffusions can only work if you can get everything to not blow up as n scales to infinity. So we can do that if we define rho to be rn. And this pi, which I've now erased, has to also be scaled. So that we define it now in terms of an n pi, which is 2 times these scaled selection coefficients over whatever it was. So these are all of these capital S's are the population size times the little s's. I don't know if that's right, but you know what I think that's it. Is that the formula? Yep. So once you put it in there, you need one of the n's for the r, one of the n's for the pi, which is on the order of 2 times s, and the diffusion process goes to a finite killing term as the population size goes to infinity. And as is typical in these diffusion processes, what that implies is that n by itself doesn't matter. All that matters are these compound parameters, r times n and n times si, so that we should see roughly similar results if you increase the population size by 10 and decrease r and s by 10. Okay. Sorry, hopefully we'll get back to the... Last, that's the last of the blackboards. So that diffusion probability, I have to admit, I... Yes, mathematics. It's related to hypergeometric functions, the trichomy function and the Laguerre, which are standard solutions to differential equations of this sort. But that, see, this is an evaluable function. You can numerically evaluate this function here. So this is trigammy, and this is Laguerre hypergeometric functions. But if we notice, they all depend, their arguments depend on these scaled selection coefficients. And if those are large enough, if n times s is reasonably large, then there are limit approximations to all of these. And making those limit approximations, and assuming recombination is reasonably weak relative to everything, then we get, then the all of that mass simplifies to this term here. And as Richard predicted, it actually doesn't depend very strong. It's not that different from the deterministic process. This is the only term that differs from the deterministic process. And if ns is large, which I've just assumed, then that's really negligible. But so, Richard.
What kind of stochasticity
does this allow?
Accounted for? Because in the pi.
That's right. I haven't done it in the pi. But I have in the. In the trajectory of the chromosome frequency. But you're absolutely right that when I did the pi, I allowed stochasticity in there and through a standard branching process form by calculating the fixation probability.
But not for the logistic curve.
But not for the logistic curve there.
You might be able to justify it by considering the branching process as a function of p rather than of time.
Which it is.
Yes.
Yeah, that's. I do assume it's a function of p, and it's probably reasonable if drift has very little effect on that local change in p during the time period in which establishment happens. But that is one place, one element where it's not a fully consistent derivation, but at least we get a result.
So do you get different asymptotics now when in a neutral case when SA is equal to
F? No, you get the same.
So you didn't pick up that effect of drift.
Oh, I'm sorry. That is a good question, because there's now not anything that I've done right. So I haven't, good question. I will tell you that later. I haven't looked at this in that case.
Well, then, you know, then your pi has a very different form. The survival probability just goes down like 1 over t and doesn't have an asymptotic value. So you get a completely different calculation.
So it has an effect on the pi.
Wait, hold on a second. So if SA equals SD, then the recombinant has a really strong selective advantage of SA no matter when it appears. So the pi still holds, and it's even easier.
But it won't work once the frequency of the beneficial allele is high, because then the deleterious. Wait.
So the pi.
Well, then the logistic just goes to part, that's it.
Yeah, so then it's fine, because I assume that part behaves.
Yeah. But I want to ask a different question. So you're e to the minus 1 over NSD.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't, to me, it does not seem to be the effect of an initial acceleration.
No, but hold on, right.
It rather is
whether it pays to care about the deleterious one or not.
So let me back, I want to finish the previous conversation a little bit. So what the diffusion would allow us to do is it would allow us to treat the case where SA and SD were close to one another. The only thing that pi requires that is that it's positively selected when it recombines. So we could deal with that case. This case, so this is a small term, and it seems to just be a small correction, but I agree with you. I don't think it's due to the initial acceleration. And I think the reason why it's really small is that when we can think about when do these recombination events happen? They happen mainly when the chromosome is midway through the sweep, because we have this RP times 1 minus P term. So by and large, I didn't have to bother with this complicated thing. By and large, the back of the envelope calculation is close.
But then it would matter whether the background is rising logistically or not, because the time integral over p.
That's right.
One minus
that's right.
P
in the limit
is
as
very different.
Yeah.
Whether this is drifting along or whether
right.
this is actually selected.
That's right. And so in that case, this should give us the right answer, even if SA and SD are really similar, but not this. So this is an example of the evaluating that nasty function, the approximation we just talked about, and then the back of the envelope calculation that ignored drift of that chromosome. So they're pretty close to equal. This is the probability of hitchhiking to fixation for a deleterious allele that has a scaled selection against it of 10. That's a function of the advantageous allele strength. And it has some properties that are trivially obvious that it should. As the strength of selection on the advantageous allele increases, the sweep goes faster. There's just not as much time for recombination, so you get a much higher chance of a hitch to fixation. If you change the recombination rate, obviously, if you have less recombination, you're going to have a higher probability of a hitch. More recombination, lower probability of a hitch. And as we would have predicted from the diffusion approximation, if you change n by tenfold but keep the scaled parameters ns and nr the same, there's no difference. There's just a slight difference in the simulations, which were harder to run with a larger population size. So it's only these net selection and recombination rates that seem to matter. And we can also ask another, I'm going to graph a few graphs where I ask not what is the probability of hitch, but how close does recombination have to be in order for there to be a 50% chance of a hitchhiking event, or an arbitrary chance, C, of a hitchhiking event. So that's just rearranging this equation, just solving it for R, so that it equals a particular value of the hitchhiking probability of interest. And that's plotted here. So this is a contour plot where the SD, the disadvantage, the strength of the disadvantage is on this axis. The recombination rate is on this axis, both scaled by n. This is weaker selection, weaker sweep, stronger sweep. And these are 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 contour plots for the probability of a hitch. So based on the approximation, that's the equation that I just showed. That gives us these cutoffs for 90%, 50%, and 10% hitch. So what does this graph tell us? It's pretty obvious that the stronger the deleterious allele is, the less likely it will hitch. So, and that's because when that recombinant appears, it has a huge selective advantage and is much more likely to establish. And again, the tighter the linkage, the more likely. The tighter the linkage, the lower we are, and the darker these plots, the more likely that hitch will be. So all of this leads to the following overall understanding of this process. Net selection and recombination rates matter, not population size on its own. The probability of a hitch declines exponentially with the recombination rate. The faster the sweep, higher SA, the advantageous benefit, the more likely a hitch. The worse the load, the higher the SD, the less likely a hitch. And I think rules of thumb are helpful. They're a little dangerous mathematically, but they're helpful biologically. This whole thing is very close to a quarter if you just plot it over all of the parameter range of interest. It's a quarter plus or minus a little bit. So just as a rule of thumb, this is how tight recombination has to be. It has to be less than, this is the net selection on the allele. So this is what we might predict going in, that if R is tighter than selection, then hitchhiking will occur. But it's actually tighter, it has to be tighter than that. And it has to be tighter by 4 NSD. And this could be quite large. So it could have to be much, much tighter in order for hitchhiking to fixation to occur. The 4, roughly, actually comes from the fact that I'm asking about fixation, not just is there an effect. So in the neutral case, we nearly get this. So I've redone this for the case where the deleterious allele is neutral, SD equals 0. Going through the whole procedure, gotten a similar result out, and the rule of thumb there is now got a 4 on the denominator. The net selection coefficient is just SA. So relative to that, hitchhiking is a lot less likely if the by a factor NSD, or recombination has to be that much tighter, which is a substantial restriction on when we'll see, where in the genome we will see these hitchhiking events happen. Here is a graph showing, so this graph shows what the critical recombination rate has to be for 50% of the time a sweep to happen. This is the neutral case and a bunch of different cases where more and more deleterious effects of the linked allele. And this is the net advantage of that chromosome that's spreading through the population. So neutral and weakly deleterious alleles are much more likely to hitch. But there's a bunch of what I'm going to call missing hitchhikers. These chromosomes would have hitchhiked to fixation had they not had a deleterious effect. But they really have a small chance of fixing unless recombination rate is tight. So there's missing hitchhikers, and that's kind of got its own interesting implications. The fact that deleterious alleles fail to hitchhike as often as neutral alleles implies that recombination events are enriched. Among those processes that fix, it's likely that recombination has uncoupled the focal allele from its deleterious genetic background. Coming at this from another perspective, Nick's work on the probability of fixation of a beneficial allele showed that on average, no matter what background an allele appeared on, the fixation probability was always higher if there's more recombination. So conditioned on fixation, I claim that there's going to be more recombination in the vicinity of a beneficial allele. And so to the extent that there are these selected sites nearby, that should diminish the signals of the selective sweep. There should be less of an effect on nearby neutral variation because they are intermixed amongst selected alleles. So that we're doing some simulations to confirm that there is, in fact, not so much of a selective sweep because of this interaction process. But I do.
This is conditioning on the beneficial allele starting in a bad background.
So the simulations are not. Uh-huh. These calculations are. Mm-hmm. But Nick's result was not. Mm-hmm. So Nick's result was saying overall possible backgrounds that it appears in, the probability of fixation is higher with higher R. Mm-hmm. So I think that implies that conditioned on fixation you have, and you count up the number of recombinant events in the history, you have to have had more.
But if you simulate this with an infinitesimal model, say lots of deleterious mutations, then you find that those favorable alleles that do actually make it tend to be in better backgrounds
to start with. Right.
That makes sense. But by the time they actually get to high frequency, they've recombined away from those good backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So the effect is that on average they're actually associated with slightly worse backgrounds because of this fixed load. So there's a kind of big difference between the backgrounds they start on and the backgrounds they end up with.
Right. And I kind of imagine that there's most of the backgrounds that most of the segregating alleles, and that most of the effect that you're talking about is probably fairly unlinked. And so there still should be, for the most tightly linked locus, that even if on average the background was better, then at this site, as the sweep happens, it has one worse thing than before, because it has this worse thing than before. So it should, this is an open question. How exactly does this play out with in a multi-locus framework? I think that's a really open question. And the key question, I think, for empiricists is how much of an effect will this have on neutral diversity? And how does that depend on that huge parameter range that Daniel was talking about yesterday? So that might be a good place to end. I have some numbers for humans, but you guys might not, well, I'll just show you these numbers. Recombination rates in humans and eukaryotic organisms that are obligately sexual, I think the answer is this does not matter at all, except for sites within a gene. Recombination rates between genes are just too high. So they're too high on those graphs, and we won't see an effect. Recombination rates within genes are closer to the boundary where we care. NER is about 1. And so then we can ask, what's the chance that when a beneficial mutation appears, there is a segregating deleterious allele in that gene? And using estimates for the rate of deleterious mutations per genome, these are the numbers that I get. There's about a 50-50 chance that a very weak deleterious allele segregating within the gene, a 3% chance that a moderate one is, and a less than 1% chance that a strongly deleterious allele is segregating within that gene. So these probabilities are just what's the chance that it actually will appear on this background, and this gets multiplied by the things we've just calculated. So I think for humans, there's a reasonable chance of a within-gene weakly deleterious allele hitchhiking. Recombination between genes is typically too high unless you're in a region that's extremely gene-dense. Hitchhiking, on the other hand, is much more likely to be an issue for facultative sexuals or for microorganisms where the rate of recombination is really low. So if you have data on these kind of numbers, I'd love to plug in your organism's data and see where we are on these graphs. Okay, thank you.
So it's of course kind of nice that everything is on scales with n, but on the other hand, we really don't know what n is. Which is troublesome.
Yeah.
So what's supposed to go in there? Is it some kind of suitably rescaled n, which is sort of a long-term coalescent time, or is it more of a short-term? Because these mutations or the recombination events, that's obviously the sort of census population size. Mm-hmm. But then you have sort of the fixation probability of these guys, and there you have to really ask of how much time do you have to average this?
So it's an excellent question, because it's certainly not NE calculated as the past effective population size, because that's the past amount of drift happening. This depends on the future amount of drift happening. So not with this question, but Nick mentioned that before we've looked at if you have a population that is growing or shrinking over time due to external forces, what do these calculations do? And you can calculate a future effective population size, which depending on S, says what's the population size is changing. What's the relevant NE for the model? Because you know how N.
Well, personally, I think NE is really sort of rather confusing.
Yeah.
And one should sort of abandon it altogether. But, if you have an expanded population size, all your selection coefficients are a little larger. And
you could use what I did before to say what your NE would be conditioning on that. But you're right that for the human population, it's not 10,000, which is probably what I use, but it really would be our current population size. Although we might be interested in signals of selection that happened in the past, so then we have to say, not only do we have
your problem. 1/S, kind of 1/S log n generations we care about, maybe. But establishment
right.
implementation happens in
right.
time 1/S.
Right, and then you want
S.
your NE at that point in the history of the human.
I mean, the time scale you have there is the time scale of your sweep, right? So it should probably be, the first guess would be the harmonic mean over that respective time interval.
Yeah, that's right. And that's
right.
So that's what Ewan showed that first, and we confirmed that. But if you don't have If you have a monotonically changing population size, then it's not the harmonic mean of that, which would be just the lowest.
I have another question, actually regarding all these hitchhiking theories, because they always assume that these beneficial sweeps follow these logistic curves in one way or another. And that assumes, well, that is a strong caricature, right? It assumes a well-mixed population and all that. For instance, if you have a spatial structure, then beneficial sweeps more proceed in waves. Okay, and wouldn't this probably change the whole story a lot?
So some things will change it and some things won't. Another thing that can is fluctuations from generation to generation in the selection coefficient. And spatial heterogeneity in selection, which is, are you talking about spatial heterogeneity?
No, just imagine you have, instead of exponentially growing sweep, initially exponentially growing sweep, you have a wave that runs through your system.
So
then you have recombinants only as the wave runs and sort of linear in time.
Okay, so we don't have a lot, correct me if I'm wrong, but so for one locus, selection in multiple in the spatial structure, we can correct for how that, rather than S becomes 1 minus B, we can correct for that for the spatial structure using, for example, FST measures for that spatial structure. You are right that I would expect this to, that to cause a lower, is it a higher effective recombination rate because there, at any, there will always be a place in the space where P is near a half, and that's where the recombinants are mainly formed.
Yeah, but that place might be quite small depending on the wavefront.
But that also means that's the only place where they're doing the competition that's allowing them to
that's
spread.
That's the only thing that matters.
So if you notice, this depended on R over SA minus SD.
Excuse me, what? I thought that was super.
So, I mean, That place where they can be combined is also the only place where they can compete.
It's on the wavefront that both things happen.
So those two factors should cancel. So if you look, so this is what I'm saying.
To integrate this number over time.
Times are much slower.
But what I'm saying is like in both the competition that's spreading the double mutant and the recombination that is allowing it to break up depend on the interactions in the same way with the.
I don't think so, because when P is really small and we just look at the wavefront, at the wavefront P is high. And so there is always a spot in the wavefront. Even when over the whole population P is low, there's still some place where recombination is happening with P near a half. I don't know the answer.
It wouldn't be too bad to work it out, because you've basically got two phases. You've got the time it takes to get from one mutation. Favorite mutation to get into high frequency anywhere, and that's given by basically the same theory, except that time is now determined by the local population density rather than the global. And then once it gets to high frequency, it spreads as a wave. Then you've got a second phase where you've got this local hotspot of recombination and stuff. But you could probably still do all these calculations just allowing for the fact that it's localized.
I'm sure if migration is high enough, you can do a separation of time scales and the spatial structure won't matter at all.
It does matter because it does take a long time for this wave to spread, so you've got a long time wave.
But if it's sufficiently high enough, well mixed.
But even that, so there's another, even if it's not quite so well mixed, the fact that migration will hamper its spread initially may not matter so much because that's.
Well, it's actually making it better.
Because there's not so much recombination happening at that stage.
It'll be interesting to work it out.
It sure would be then.
In this case, it's sort of, if you don't have spatial structure, it's n times r over s. Mm-hmm. It's the number of recombinants approximately, and you can predict factors of four if you like. But if it's sort of spreading through the population, you basically get sort of the subpopulation size times r over s.
Okay, you need to change that population size, you're right.
Yeah. What is the correct population?
No, it's a super interesting question, and I think that's a great point to have coffee to this discussion, and then be back in the room.